From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. Jeremy Mohawk Johnson, Mohawk is a nickname, is a Chicago rapper and comedian. He was one of thousands of people protesting for racial justice who were arrested by Chicago police last summer. Johnson was put on house arrest while he awaits trial for charges. He assaulted a police officer. House arrest comes with an electronic monitor, but he says the device he was given by the court is faulty, going off dozens of times when he's in his home, even when he's sleeping in bed. He's been documenting his experiences on social media, and people have been following along with the hashtag #FreeMohawk. The use of electronic monitoring devices for people who have yet to be convicted of a crime, it's increasing, particularly during the pandemic and amid a year of protests. Advocates say instead of keeping communities safe, the monitors make it more difficult for people to find or maintain jobs or to take care of their health and family. Mohawk Johnson joins us now to talk more about his experiences. Mohawk, thanks so much for being with us today on The 21st.
Cool. Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Listeners, if you want to join our conversation, the number to call is 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. All right, Mohawk, let's start at the beginning. When did you first get this monitoring device? What was that process like?
So I was arrested on August 15th, and I think on the 16th or 17th, I had an arraignment hearing where I was, I had my bond set. A judge was told that because I don't have a criminal record of any sort, that I should be released without condition. And despite that, the judge saw it fit to hit me with a $20,000 bond, which is higher than the bond of the officer that killed Breonna Taylor. And that I was supposed to be placed on electronic monitoring. And I was let out of jail several days later, which isn't usually supposed to happen. What happens is that you're supposed to get let go the second that your bail is paid. The second that your bail is paid. And my bail was paid within like 4 to 5 hours of it being set. And I was held for a few days anyway. They were apparently looking for a monitor for me. And then they put the monitor on my ankle, and I was sent to stay at a friend's house for a bit before being able to go back to my own home.
And I know you don't, for listeners, I know you don't want to really talk about the details of your case. This is an ongoing litigation. I understand you pleaded not guilty, plan to fight this in court. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong there, but let's talk. What is this device like? What does it physically look like? Where is it on you? How does it work?
It looks like the bottom of a walkie-talkie. It looks like a walkie-talkie with no antenna, essentially. And it has a little green light on the top that blinks to let you know that it's working. And when you charge it, it tends to blink faster. And then the light turns solid green and stops blinking once the device is fully charged. So I've been charging it for the last 15 minutes, and it's fully charged now. So I can actually go ahead and unplug this. And how it works is it's supposed to operate via GPS. But for anybody who has played Pokemon Go before, GPSs aren't always the best. And what ends up happening is bad weather or too much wind, or just being in a certain section of my house at just a certain time will sometimes mess up the signal. And that's when I get violations or sheriffs coming to the house to see if I'm home.
So what is that like when that's happening? I've heard you've shared posts on social media that this is even happens while you're in the middle of the night, while you're sleeping. Is there a beeping? Do you get an email? What is that process like?
Sometimes I get an email. Sometimes I get a text message. Sometimes I get both. Every now and then they will call my ankle because they can call the ankle monitor, and they will say, Mr. Johnson, we are calling for Jeremy Johnson. We see that you are reporting outside of your approved zone. Do you have permission to be away?
It's like a speakerphone?
So they come right out of the gate saying, you know, we see you're outside. Are you allowed outside right now? And I am always like very confused and disoriented, especially in the middle of the night, because this does happen in the middle of the night sometimes. And then I have to explain myself that I'm not outside, that I'm in my bed, that I fell asleep on the couch watching Ben 10 or something. And yeah, we work from there. And then they have to decide if they're going to give me violations, because they have to document that I'm not leaving my house. I believe I was given one official violation that I had to dispute, like go through like a lot of work to dispute, despite me reporting that it's a false alarm, because I don't know if the report just didn't get through in time or if it just wasn't made. But I told them flat out that I was at home and I recorded being at home, and they got brought up in court anyway. And that happens to people where these things get brought up in court and they're used to harshened sentences.
How many times has this happened? Is this like a one or two or three or four time thing? Or is it a lot more than that?
This has happened more than 60 times. This has happened more than 60 times. And interesting thing, like on my TikTok, I've had sheriffs and other law enforcement like come in the comments and say like they hate these monitors and they don't like using them because most of the time they go off, it's false alarms. So like I guess my thing is, if law enforcement is even acknowledging like in my comment section that they're aware that these alarms are false and that these things are faulty, is why the court is so invested about using them, I guess, is what confuses me.
Well, I wanted to ask, what response have you gotten from the court or from the sheriff's office when you say, I'm home, this is a false alarm, or whatever you want to call it?
Well, I'm pretty sure they see the social media now. So like they see me at home and they see me talking to the person on my monitor who's calling me through my leg that I'm at home. So they see that.
That's brilliant. So you're video recording yourself at home.
Oh yeah,
home,
I'm video recording
on the call.
I have a TikTok that these are all on. Yes.
Okay. Let me bring a new voice into the conversation now. We're joined now by James Kilgore, who has become a nationally cited expert and activist on incarceration and electronic monitoring. His books include Understanding Mass Incarceration. He's also the director of the Champaign-Urbana-based Challenging E-Carceration Project and co-director of the First Followers Reentry Program. He also has personal experience with electronic monitoring. We'll get to that more in a bit. James Kilgore, thanks for being here today on the 21st. Can you begin by telling us, do we know how many people in Illinois are on these sort of devices awaiting trial before they've ever been convicted of a crime?
Oh, good morning, Brian. Thanks very much for having me on. I really appreciate you paying attention to this issue and to the case of Mohawk Johnson, which I've been following. The fact of the matter is, we don't really know how many people are on electronic monitoring in Illinois. We don't know how many people are on electronic monitoring in the United States. This is a very untransparent technology. There's no systematic data recorded on this. We do have fairly accurate data from Cook County, and as of yesterday, they had about 3,650 people on electronic monitoring. But for the other sort of 101 counties in Illinois, we only have sketchy data at best. And as I said, Cook County is one of the most accurate counties in terms of keeping track of this, but I've reached out to a lot of states and a lot of metros, and very few of them keep detailed records.
Is the story that you've heard from Mohawk Johnson, is that a familiar story to you? Are there is false positives? How common is it that people have that experience?
I don't think I can recall ever asking anybody, have you had any technical problems with the monitor, that they didn't say that they had. Now, whether that's the problem of false positives, whether that's the problem of the battery not charging, I had one person who told me this story that he was reported, his location was reported in the middle of Lake Michigan. So I think there's a lots of tales of this. But I think it's also important to recognize that it's not false positives that are the biggest problem with electronic monitoring. For me, the biggest problem is that people like Mohawk Johnson are imprisoned in their house, and they're kept from doing what they need to do in order to keep their lives together, even though they haven't been convicted of anything.
Okay, well, that's a good pivot point to ask. Mohawk, what sort of effect has being on electronic monitoring had on your life?
It's had a ridiculously negative effect on my life. Every time I get a text message, I have a minor anxiety attack that it's just the sheriff's office hitting me up telling me that I'm not home. I'm in constant fear that they're just going to show up one day and drag me back to jail when I didn't do anything. It's impossible to find work with this thing. Getting movement approved for anything is really difficult. I was allowed via court order to be allowed to like go grocery shopping at two specific locations in my neighborhood in a certain amount of time on certain days. And, you know, you can like ask for approval for doctor's appointments. I had such a hard time just getting approval to get my COVID vaccine because I'm trying to get vaccinated. I'm trying to do my due diligence to keep the community safe, even though I'm technically not a part of it right now. And it was so difficult because it takes so long to get approval. So even when you want to do stuff to be a productive member of society, or if you have a case like mine or like anybody's where the judges or the courts want to see if you're capable of being out in the world, it's almost impossible to do so. Like I'm not going to be able to get a job in order to prove to the court that I can be a productive member of society if I can't go to job interviews, or if when I go to a job interview, my monitor goes off because they see I'm not home, but they didn't check to see if my movement was approved. And that's happened. I've been called on my approved movement before because whoever calls me just doesn't, I don't know if they're not looking at the screen to see if my movement is approved or what, but it has a huge impact on my ability to just exist. And for a system that says it's about rehabilitation, it's doing much more to incriminate me for things I'm not doing than I think it's ever done to attempt to reform me. And this is like before the conversation of conviction, because I have yet to have trial.
Right, right. All right, we need to take a break in a few minutes. Before we do, though, I want to go to the phones at 800-222-9455. We have Tim is calling on the line from Urbana. Tim, thanks for calling in.
Thanks, Brian. Quick question, sir. To the gentleman who's wearing the bracelet, sir, do you have a, because I missed the start of the show, do you have a probation or parole officer you could go to with these problems? I'm not aware of how you were mandated to wear this bracelet. That's my only question.
All right. Well,
I do not have a probation officer because I am not on probation yet, because I have not had trial yet. So I haven't been convicted. I'm not on parole or probation. There's no officer I can turn to for this.
Yeah. So that complicates the situation. Let me ask, James, I mentioned earlier you had firsthand experience with electronic monitoring. This was part of your prison sentence related to your time in the Symbionese Liberation Army back in the 70s. I mean, from a personal standpoint, can you talk about what was the experience of electronic monitoring like for you?
Well, I think it's important to say that electronic monitoring was not part of a prison sentence, that it was part of the conditions of my parole. And for me, I don't believe that people who have served their prison time should be subjected to further incarceration by being confined to their house and having their movement restricted. So all of the things that Mohawk's talking about, I mean, I experienced most of them in terms of restrictions of movement. So the general expectation for people who go to prison and serve the sentence that's mandated by the court is that when you finish that sentence, you're supposed to be free. But what's happening with probably 2,500 to 3,000 people under the authority of the Illinois Department of Corrections right now is that they're being mandated to put on these electronic monitors. And until we put forward quite a big campaign in 2019 to get these monitors taken off of people coming out of IDOC, most of those people were restricted to their house in ways that are similar to what Mohawk Johnson is experiencing. So people that have done 15, 20 years, they're coming out expecting to be able to take a walk through their neighborhood, to go out to dinner with their family, maybe just take a drive around to see what the city looks like after 20 years. And instead, they're confined to their house and only let out 3 or 4 hours a day. And really, the world is very confusing when you've been incarcerated for a long time. And being confined to your house does not help you make that transition.
Yeah, and I just want to emphasize in that you're talking about after serving a prison sentence, and in Mohawk's case, we just want to emphasize no trial has taken place yet. There's been no conviction. So we're going to continue this conversation. We need to take a break for our member stations. Listeners, if you have a comment or another question, you want to join our conversation, the number is 800-222-9455, 800-222-9455. More to come after a short break. This is the 21st. Stay with us.
The 21st is made possible in part by Busey. Whether you're just starting out or upgrading to your dream home, Busey can guide you every step of the way because they know there's no place like home. Busey, fulfilling dreams since 1868.
You're listening to The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. Coming up in just a few minutes, we're going to have our conversation with USDA Secretary, U.S. Secretary of Agriculture, Tom Vilsack. But first on the show today, we're talking about electronic monitoring. This is in the case we're talking about it today, primarily, this is for people who have been charged with a crime, but they have not yet had a trial. They have not yet been convicted. They get a little device they have to wear around. It operates on GPS or sometimes other technology and sort of monitors their position. We're speaking with Mohawk Johnson, who's a comedian and rapper from Chicago who was arrested during the racial justice protests last summer, who has had a device that, as we've heard, has gone off when he's been at home scores of times. We're also speaking with James Kilgore, who is co-director of the First Followers Reentry Program and director of the Challenging Ecarceration Project. And he is joining us from Central Illinois. If you have a question, you want to join our conversation, the number is 800-222-9455. James, can you talk a little bit about the surveillance aspect of this? We heard, you know, Mohawk was arrested at a protest. He's awaiting trial. Are there concerns about the surveillance aspect of this technology as, you know, phones are increasingly becoming a part of the electronic monitoring industry?
Absolutely. The initial electronic monitors, ankle, and I prefer to call them shackles rather than bracelets because I don't think they're jewelry, actually. But the initial ankle shackles simply told the authorities whether or not you were at home. But in the early 2000s, when they began to develop GPS capacity, all of a sudden they're tracking your location. Now we find devices that can talk to you, that you can talk back to them. We find that they're gathering huge amounts of location data, and we don't really know where that data goes. We know that it probably ends up on the cloud, and it may be used in various ways to further criminalize people, to maybe inhibit their access to credit, access to employment. Landlords may get do some kind of a background check on someone, and some of this data may show up. It may even connect them to other people who are involved in criminal activity simply because they happen to be in the vicinity of that person, even though they have nothing to do with them. So I think it's a big worry that these devices are gathering lots of data, that it's not clear what happens to the data, very little accountability, and that the companies that are gathering this data can also profit by selling the data to other companies and individuals.
Interesting. We have another caller on the line. Linda is joining us from Bloomington. Linda, thanks for calling in.
Yes. I've only been acquainted with one person who had one of those ankle devices, and they had to pay for that and it was kind of expensive.
Oh, interesting.
Does Mohawk have to pay for his device?
Okay, thank you for the question, Linda. Mohawk, how about that? Are you being billed for this?
I am not, but I have heard about that. And what makes that so insidious is because of the restrictions on access to work, the expectation to pay for a device, accumulate money, while also staying inside of your house and never being allowed to work, is just, it feels like entrapment.
If I could just add something on that. I mean, Cook County and the Illinois Department of Corrections are the exceptions in that they don't charge people, but increasingly people are being charged fees, which can range up to $30 a day to be on an electronic monitor. So really this is taking a sizable portion of people's wages. And in many cases, it's actually forcing them to make major lifestyle changes or to make a choice. Do I pay rent or do I pay my electronic monitoring fees? Do I buy medicine for my children or do I pay my electronic monitoring fees in order that I don't get sent back to jail? So there's, for example, a lawsuit in Alameda County in California brought forward by four people who were on pretrial monitors who were paying up to $35 a day for the fees, and basically it was destroying their life. They ended up having to give up their apartment. They ended up having to parcel their children out to relatives because he couldn't afford a place to live, and he ended up living in his car, all because of electronic monitoring fees. So and these companies that are running these electronic monitoring programs, a lot of them are the major prison profiteers who are already making huge amounts of money from incarceration. So the biggest electronic monitoring company, BI, is a subsidiary of the GEO Group, which is the largest private prison company in the world. Another big program, STOP, is run by Securus, which is a big provider in terms of prison phones and prison video visitation. So this is a growing market. And we've seen that the market has expanded during the COVID epidemic.
Well, James, let me ask you, I'm sure there are some people who are hearing this who are thinking, you know, electronic monitoring, for all its problems, it's better than sitting in jail waiting for a trial. Maybe you think that's a false dichotomy. What would you say to that, to somebody who would come at you with that argument?
I mean, I think it is a false dichotomy because there's a third alternative, and that is not to incarcerate people and not to have them on an electronic monitor. Of course, I would never say to somebody who's sitting in jail and is offered the opportunity to come out on an electronic monitor, oh no, you should stay in there because electronic monitoring is bad. For an individual decision, that's a different situation. But I'm talking about policy now. Do we want to sink millions into electronic monitors and gather data, tracking data on people? Or do we want to sink millions into programs that help people get their lives back together, whether that's substance abuse programs, whether that's mental health issues, whether that's assisting people with getting employment? Certainly all these kinds of things are a much better way to spend money on people than to track them and then incarcerate them in their house, which, by the way, also places a huge burden on their family members who then often have to take care of their basic necessities, including, because they can't work, paying the electronic monitoring fees. So really, better than jail is something that I've been hearing for 10 years. And I always say, yes, I get that, but let's look at it in a bigger picture. Let's find better ways to spend money, in the same way that we found better ways to spend money than build jails and build prisons.
Mohawk, before last summer's racial justice protests, did you ever imagine that you would find yourself in a situation like this?
No, but only because I thought I would be dead. Because, I've been protesting, you know, since college, you know, since Trayvon and Mike Brown, I've been protesting. And my assumption was never, you know, I'm going to get arrested. My assumption was always going to be, I'm probably going to get murdered. Like they're going to shoot me, or, you know, someone's going to hit me with a car, or they're going to snatch me off of the street and I'm not going to be found. And then I'm going to turn up somewhere. That was always my assumption. So I never thought I would be on house arrest, but that's only because I assumed what would happen to me would be worse. And that also happens to a lot of protesters. There are people who are still missing from protests.
I was going to ask if you've heard from other Black Lives Matter protesters who might be in a similar situation or worry that this is happening to other people.
Yes, this is happening to people all over. I have been in a number of ways blessed and cursed with my case being brought publicly because of the local news, where people are like watching. But like, there are other people who are being hit with like 128 counts of mob action or vandalism, and it's just for organizing protests, who are on electronic monitoring. There are people who were on electronic monitoring because they were next to someone else and they got arrested and there was an altercation with police. Like, there are people who are being put on monitoring and being attached to other stuff that's going on around them simply for being present. And it's happening all over the place. And I feel personally, in a lot of ways, it's just a very good way to scare people out of protesting. You know, you watch the news and you see these people standing up for their rights, and you see that they're getting felonies. And even if they like do time or not, you know, that felony, that's going to carry with you for the rest of your life. And it makes a lot of people not want to protest anymore. So a lot of us are just being used as scare tactics to keep other people from standing up.
Well, Mohawk Johnson, we will continue to follow your case. Thank you so much for sharing your story with us today on the 21st.
I appreciate the opportunity. Thank you very much.
And James Kilgore, thank you to you as well for being with us and sharing your expertise today on the 21st.
Okay, thank you very much.